Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Golfers Journal podcast. My name's Tom Coyne. I'm a senior writer at the Golfers Journal, and I'm the new host of this podcast. If you caught our last episode, you would have heard a little bit about the transition. DJ passing the torch off to me. DJ Pyhowski, thanks so much for doing so many great episodes here on the podcast. He's got a lot of great stuff going on with the Golfers Journal, with No Laying Up. So I'm trying to fill his very big shoes and will do my best. So I'm coming in during what's a huge week for the Golfers Journal. A lot of exciting stuff going on. First of all, check your mailboxes because number 7, issue 7, is shipping right now. The issue is just, it's bonkers. It's fantastic. It's full of great stuff. So to celebrate its awesomeness, we're throwing some launch parties. We have a party in New York, in San Francisco, and in Osaka, Japan. Free food and drink, so come and hang out with us. We've rented some hitting bays at 5-Iron in the Financial District in Manhattan. We're going to be in the retail spaces of State Apparel in San Fran, and we'll be at Clubhouse Golf Supply in Osaka. You can RSVP for these events at golfersjournal.com/events. Especially for the New York event, so we know we have a hitting bay for you. And let it be known that these parties are non-subscriber friendly. So please bring your non-subscribing friends. Have them come down and share with them the glory of the Golfers Journal and Issue 7. It's going to be a great time. Check your inboxes and your socials for more details. If you're in the area, please come by. It's going to be a lot of fun. And how about this for fun? I'm just full of good news today. Really excited to announce this November, the Golfers Journal Punta Mita Retreat in Mexico. It's limited to 30 subscribers. So if you're not a subscriber, this is the time. Jump in right now so that you can be a part of this. I mean, tickets aren't even on sale yet, but you can go to golfersjournal.com and you can sign up there to be first in line to purchase tickets when they become available. Even if you can't go, go to the website, check out the images of the course and the resort. They're absolutely mind-blowing. I'm going to be there. I'm psyched. So hope to see you there as well. Now, before we jump into our conversation today, just want to make sure that we thank the folks who make this podcast and make the Golfers Journal possible. That's you, our listeners and our subscribers, and our 6 faithful sponsors, Scotty Cameron, Lynx Soul, Titleist, New York Private Bank and Trust, Oakley, and Lynx and Kings. So now that we're all fired up about issue number 7, shipping this week, our podcast this week is inspired by one of the stories from number 7, which seems appropriate. Now, the story is called The Quest. And it's really, I think, one of the coolest ideas for a story that I've read in the Golfers Journal. I'm a sucker for quest stories. I've done a lot of crazy ones myself. It's one of those stories you read, and as a writer, you just think, damn, why did I come up with this? This is great. But the gentleman who did come up with it, his name's Matt Crossman. He's a dad with 2 kids who says he's happy if he breaks 100 anymore. And he set out on a 3-month quest to have a hole-in-one. Now, I'm not going to give away the ending. I'll just say you have to read this story. It's incredibly special. But in reading it, it got me thinking about the hole-in-one and the grip that it has on Matt in this story and that it has on so many golfers. And, you know, this power and this magic of the hole-in-one, what is it? It's more than just that the ball went in and that you got to write a one on your scorecard. I mean, I think for me, it's the moment where, you know, golf's a game where at least I often feel like the universe is conspiring against me, right? Whether it be the elements or my skill or the golf course or the green, you know, there's a lot of things that are trying to keep my ball out of that hole. Yet with a hole in one, and I've had one, that sensation of that feeling was that the universe, that everything flipped. And instead of the universe trying to keep my ball out of the hole, everything was conspiring to get it in the hole. And that for me was like the magic and the miracle of it. Now, maybe I'm overstating it. It wouldn't be the first time. Maybe you think a hole-in-one is just golf's luckiest shot. Well, I think after you hear the 3 stories I'm about to share with you, you might think otherwise. So first up, we're going to speak with someone for whom the hole-in-one has become something of an albatross, a literal curse, if you will. But he's a golfer who's turning his hole-in-one frustration into philanthropy. He's taking his golf lemons and turning them into lemonade or Baconade, in this case. This is Shane Bacon, who lives and sounds like an ace, even if he hasn't had one yet. So I'm here with my friend Shane Bacon. Shane, how you doing?
I'm great.
And Shane, the listeners will, of course, know you from Fox Sports, reporting on golf there and talking to players at the U.S. Open. They'll also recognize your voice from PGA Tour Live,
from your podcast, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, but probably best known for your crowning achievement, contributor to the Golfer's Journal. What was that like?
Definitely. That was one of the more fun things I've got to be a part of, kind of diving in on that, the trip to South Korea. And, you know, it was one of those things that just looking back on it, you know, it'd been a couple of years and you just, you have to kind of remember the things that happened and try to make them a little prettier and all that stuff. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm hoping to contribute more in the future.
Yeah, it was awesome. It's fantastic. So today we're talking about holes in one. And
great,
you know, but your name, so your name comes to my mind, but maybe not for the right reasons. So tell me about your relationship with the ace and what you have going on in your life with the hole in one.
Yeah, so we call it the Bacon curse. My dad was a really good player. You know, he was probably a one or a two handicap. Used to play a couple times a week back in East Texas.
Really?
When I was growing up, he never made a hole in one. My uncle has been playing golf forever. My uncle's almost 70 years old.
Wow.
He plays probably twice a week. He's never made a hole in one. You know, he got down to probably a three or four. And so I've never made an ace. And it's always been kind of a joke online and on social media throughout the years. And anytime there's some story about, you know, some first timer making two aces in the same round,
yeah,
I get tagged by about four different people. So a couple of years ago, I started a charity jar. And I said, I'm going to try to lean on karma here to help my journey. And so every round of golf I play and I don't make an ace, I put a dollar in this jar. And actually, right before I jumped on the call with you, I added it up and I'm at $239 and 10 pounds, which the pounds were from a trip I did in Scotland. So I figured it was apropos to throw that in there as well. But yeah, it's been one of those things. If I play a par three course, I'll throw $5 in there.
Wow.
And I've actually had some people online send me, I had a guy Venmo me $50 and I threw it in there kind of right when I got started. And so yeah, it's growing and growing. The sad thing is I think I play less and less golf now. So the contributions are few and far between, but the moment I make it an ace, if and when it ever happens, I'm going to donate that jar to the Children's Hospital here in Phoenix. So
wow.
I'm hoping to be able to walk that thing down the street and hand that over to the desk at one point with a big old smile on my face.
That would be amazing. And hopefully it's not like enough to like build a new wing by that point.
I'm 90 years old. They don't even take currency anymore.
But yeah, and exactly. What's cash? No, that's amazing. So the Bacon curse, though, I didn't know it was a family thing. And you're a great player as well. So for no one in your family to have had one, is there an origin that you think to the Bacon curse? Like, is there some way to exercise it? Is there something to it?
I mean, I guess you could say we're not, as a team, we're not great iron players, which I think if you went through my all three of the people I've mentioned, including myself, that's probably the worst parts of our game. But, you know, sure. I mean, Tom, I've had balls fly in the hole and pop out. I mean, I've had them lip out. I've had them, you know, an inch behind the hole. I've had them hit the hole. I mean, I've had everything you can have happen that would potentially be an ace, it not happen. So, you know, I'm just waiting for the moment. I've had a few the last, you know, 6-8 months where they're in the air and you're like, that looks really good. And, I'll be happy to be the guy that buys all the drinks for the club. But, you know, the sad thing is my dad's 70 now and rarely plays. So I'm not certain he'll ever get that. And my uncle's still out there grinding. But yeah, it's we're going to have some magic over in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, you are. I mean, do you think that, and I wish you all the magic because it's quite a tragic story. It sounds like there's something cosmic lined up against you here. But do you think it puts more pressure on you to have the jar and to sort of see that and be reminded often that, you know, you don't have your ace? So every par three you step up to, like, I'm not really thinking about, I've got one, it's nothing special, but, you know, I'm not thinking about that I haven't had an ace. Do you think about it every time you're at a par three? And maybe does that add a little pressure?
I don't think about it every time I'm at a par three, but I mean, there's definitely moments where, you know, it's a good number, it's a good flag. And I'll be standing over the ball thinking, you know, this is, if you make the swing you should make, this should be pretty close. And then when you do it, you know, the problem for me always is like blind par threes. You hit a good golf shot and you kind of see the ball disappear. And everybody knows, you know, my friends, people we play with, you know, they know and they joke with me. And I obviously joke about it as well. I mean, I have fun with it. You know, if I never make one, it's probably a better story than if I make one. It's almost like those sports fans that, you know, go 80, 90 years and their team doesn't win the World Series. And when they finally win it, you know, they don't really have that thing to complain about anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of my golfing thing. You know, I've made a double eagle. You know, I've holed out, you know, long irons before. I've done all that stuff. It just never happened on the tee. So, yeah, I mean, I had a famously had a moment playing with my dad And we were playing in a scramble in Arkansas with his best friend and his best friend's son. And I was probably 16 or 17. And of course, at this time, I was evergreen. I was like, I'm going to make 50 aces. What are we talking about?
Right.
And I hit this ball and it's going right at it and it disappears. And everybody goes ape shit. And we write one on the card and go up there. And there was a slope behind the hole. And it was like 4 feet behind the hole. And that was a little bit, when I look back on the moments that kind of encapsulate this journey, that was the start of it. Because it was, again, you're going, oh, I have a whole bunch of chances at this. What are we even talking about? And right. That would have been a nice one to make with Dad along. But we'll see. I mean, I still believe it'll happen, but I definitely think about it probably more than somebody does that has a couple already on their resume.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a lot of golf ahead of you, man. You're a young man and a great golfer. I think it's going to happen for you. That's my hope. If it gets to a point, you know, where it becomes more like a bucket than a jar and, you know, the more have you ever dipped into it, like when you don't have cash for the pizza dude or like the rent's late? You do well, so I know that's not an issue, but
I have made change out of it before. And I actually, if you guys want to see the jar, I'll post it on my Instagram at Shane Bacon. So I'll post that when the pod comes out. But
okay.
I have had to make change in it. And I've actually had, you know, followers or kind of fans on social media say, why is there a 20 in there? And I'm like, listen, I needed to get one. So I had to tip somebody. And it's like, I promise I'm not taking money out of this thing, but I'll go in there about once every 6-8 months and just count it up and write on a little slip where we're at just to kind of, I don't know, make myself more depressed, I guess. But I will say, and I've got one thing I'm going to do when I make an ace for people out there, people that have followed me on social media, I've got this thing. I'm not going to say what it is. I've already planned it out. I've already thought about it. But there's a little, it's going to be an interactive moment for people that have kind of followed me throughout the years on social media through this and have had a lot of fun with it, you know, kind of at my mercy. And I'm going to do something for people out there to have a good time with it as well. So hopefully,
okay.
If that happens, you'll get a chance to see that when it happens. Wow. If Twitter's still even a thing, if Twitter might be the MySpace of my life at that point where you're going, remember when people wrote on this thing with words?
Well, that's awesome. So it's going to be a party. I'm excited. Yeah, it's going to happen. But, you know, like you said, it'll be bittersweet because it's something to be known for, to be, you know, if you had an ace, like, you know, a lot of other people, like, I wouldn't be talking to you right now, man. You know,
exactly.
Nobody cares. I mean, the Red Sox were a lot more interesting before they started.
Exactly.
Winning. Same with the Cubs. So, yeah, it's not all a bad thing. It's a cool story. And I love what you're doing with the jar. And Shane, thank you for the time and good luck, my friend.
I appreciate it. And like I said, the moment it happens, trust me, there will be plenty of, it'll be the most social I'm on social media maybe in the next 20 years, if and when I ever goes in. So that'll be a fun moment.
I'm excited for it. All right. Good luck, buddy.
Now, next we have a story from a man who's seen his fair share of holes in one, but none of them compared to what he witnessed one weekend along the coast of England. Now, you might recall this story by acclaimed golf photographer David Cannon from Golfer's Journal number 2, but it's such a good story, I wanted to hear it in David's words. It's an absolute mind-blower, and it's a reminder of that old golf adage that, you know, it's good to be good, but it's better to be Bob Taylor. All right, folks, so I'm here with David Cannon, and David, it's an honor to speak with you. I mean, I've admired your work for a long time. Folks, if you're not familiar with David by name, you certainly have seen his work. I think you photographed more golfers and golf courses maybe than anyone alive. You know, you're not just a golf photographer, though. You're actually a pretty accomplished player.
Yep.
And also a contributor to the Golfer's Journal, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those early articles for them.
They're fantastic. And one of them, number 2, you know, so today we're talking about the miracle of the hole-in-one. And your story in number 2, I don't know if they're, well, I don't want to sell it too much, but I don't know if there is a more miraculous sort of hole-in-one encounter than what you experienced in England. Tell us what happened.
Well, you know, I mean, I've been around golf now for about 38 years and I've, you know, covered 116 men's majors tournaments and I've seen hole-in-ones and they're incredibly exciting.
Right.
But this was a specific weekend when I was still playing at a reasonably high level as an amateur and I was playing for my county, Leicestershire, which is, you know, it's a bit like your states in America. And we played in a what they call the Eastern Counties foursomes down at Hunstanton Golf Club in Norfolk. And it's a typically British, very alien to Americans, to play sixsomes, which was a three-ball foursomes competition where we played two counties at the same time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it happens over a Saturday and a Sunday. You play 36 holes. And we went down on the Friday afternoon for a practice round and Well, Bob Taylor, really good little player with our team, he managed to hole in one on the 16th, which is a pretty tough classic links par three. Downhill, slightly.
Go Bob.
Yeah, slightly downhill, and it's about 180 yards from memory. And Bob stood on the tee there and promptly holed in one. So that was quite a nice, you know, thing to happen in the practice round. And, you know.
Yeah.
We all thought, great, that's brilliant. A good start to the weekend.
Very good start.
Yeah. And then anyway, on Saturday morning, Bob missed the green, I think. And then Saturday afternoon, wonder of wonders, he stood on the tee with I think it was either a 6-iron or his bent 2-iron, which was, you know, effectively a 1-iron because the wind changed one of the days and I can't remember which day it was, and holed in one again.
Boom.
So that was a pretty epic moment, as you can imagine.
Back to back.
Yeah, 2 days in a row on the same hole. And we were thinking, wow, this is ridiculous. So we had a massive party that night.
Right.
And, you know, one of the team said, come on, Bob, you won't do that. I'll bet you a 1,000,000 to 1 you won't do it again on a penny. And we all said, don't be ridiculous. Make it worthwhile for him. So I think we changed 10p or something. But anyway, no one even dreamt in their wildest dreams anything like that would happen. But the Sunday morning, I think Bob missed the green comfortably again. And then Sunday afternoon, I was lucky enough to be playing in the match ahead and our match was still going. And we were stood on the 17th tee. And like everybody all around, we all stopped and watched, basically.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I saw this ball pitch on the front of the green. Pin was right at the back and it went like a rabbit up the green, bang into the pin, plop into the hole.
Oh my gosh.
You know, cue incredible, people running all over the golf course, basically.
Yeah, I mean, what was your reaction? How do you react to that?
Well, I just ran over to him. You know, everyone did.
Yeah.
It was just like one of those incredible moments. And I cannot imagine anywhere in the world that could have possibly have happened before. And
right.
I was at the US Open 1 year. I can't remember. I think it was Oakland Hills or Oak Hill. And we had 4 holes in 1 by 9:30 in the morning on the same hole. But that was because of the pin position. It was like put in a little hollow and the balls were feeding right in from both sides. And, you know, we then spent the rest of the day sitting on this hole waiting for another one. Of course, there wasn't one, but they'd had
right
4 in the morning. And that's a pretty awesome hole in one, you know, thing to have seen. But I think Bob's story is still the best. Nothing will ever match that for me.
It's unbelievable. Do you have the same sort of tradition over there that if, you know, with a hole in one, he has to open the bar?
Yeah, we had that.
So 3 days in a row. I mean, did he go broke?
Well, no, everybody put in the end. And then I know he got given, you know, imagine doing that in this day and age, in the day of mobile phones and everything else.
Oh my gosh.
That would have been filmed.
Oh, totally viral.
Yeah, it would have been ridiculous. And I think the guy got given 12 golf balls by Dunlop. And I think he may have got a few from a guy from Cambridge team who worked for Titleist, who are based in Cambridgeshire over here. And I think he got a bit of glassware from his home club and that was about it. And you just think to yourself,
what about the 10,000 quid or the big bet?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was Guy Baker. And I think to be fair to Guy, every single Christmas, a crate of champagne would arrive at Bob's house until he died.
All right.
So I thought that, you know, that was pretty, you know, that was a nice way to settle it.
That's solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, enough Christmases. That'll make it up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's extraordinary. I mean, hole-in-ones, they're miracles, right? You know, they're those moments when you feel like, because golf, for the most part, you feel like everything's kind of conspiring against you, and then...
And no one realizes how hard they are to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I suppose if you went to a bookie in this day and age and said, give me some odds for 2 holes-in-1 on the same hole in consecutive days, they'd give you... You know, they might give you, say, 100,000 to 1 or something. And then now, if 3 days in a row on the same hole, I can't imagine that they would even contemplate that as a possibility.
Well, if Bob Taylor's out there, everybody, make sure you put a few Bob down on that for sure.
Yeah, he's still going strong, Bob, by the way, and he still plays off a single-figure handicap and plays every single day, I think, in his retirement.
Any more holes in one for him? I guess once you've done that, it's like...
I think he has, yeah. You should have done. You should give Bob a ring. But, you know, yeah, get his side of the story. A lot more accurate than mine would ever have been from memory 40-odd years ago. But, no, he's still just mind-blowing. And the club at Huntsdanton, to be fair, it's, you know, folklore down there, quite rightly so. And he's got a nice stone plaque on the tee and everything else.
Oh, that's cool. All right. So you can go visit and see the site where 3 holes in one 3 days in a row.
For you guys, the American travelers who go to Scotland and Ireland to play links golf courses, you could do a lot worse than go and play. There's a 3 or 4 courses on that Norfolk coast that are equally as good as most of the championship courses anywhere, and really good old-fashioned links golf as well.
Well, I'll have to do it. I've done a little bit in England, but I haven't done those courses, so I want to go see the plaque.
You should go. I mean, you'll just be amazed. The whole course is a great golf course anyway, but you know, that whole, it's a lovely hole downhill, and it's, you know, well bunkered. Just to imagine how hard it is to get those holes in one on that hole.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a good story, right? Being Bob Taylor, seeing if I can even get one. So it's just amazing.
Funnily enough, about 3 years ago, we all met there. Well, as many as the team that were able to. I think we had 5 of us there. And there's 10 aside, so it's half the team. We all got there and played 18 holes and had a good meal afterwards just to try and, you know, catch up with life. We've all gone our different ways. And, you know, I've had an amazing life with golf.
Yes, you have. You really have. And you'll always be bonded by the ace miracle. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
You know, like I was saying, there's something about the hole-in-one. When, you know, golf is a game where things are going against you mostly, you usually think, you know, all these things are conspiring against. But for the ball to go in like that in 3 days in a row, I mean, that's everything's conspiring for you. It's just got to feel cosmic.
Beyond comprehension, isn't it?
It really is.
So he effectively had 5 shots and he held him one 3 times on a hole. That's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, he's living right. That's really cool. Happy for Bob Taylor. David, happy for you and all your success and your career. And thank you for spending some time with us to tell us this, you know, amazing story. And look forward to seeing more of you in the Golfer's Journal.
Yeah, I will. Hopefully, if they want me to, I will.
Absolutely. All right. Take care, David.
Bye.
And finally, a hole-in-one story in which the hole-in-one is probably the least important or interesting part of the story. I remember first hearing this story, and as it was told to me, you know, I didn't believe it. In fact, it kind of freaked me out a little bit. But then I had the chance to sit down with Vic Dupuy and listen to him tell the story and to see how at peace he was about it. And it became this great and sort of humbling reminder that there are bigger things out there than us. It was pretty powerful. It turns out that we had a mutual friend that I reached out to try and get in touch with Vic so that I could hear his story. And my friend told me, yeah, no problem. I'll get you in touch with Lazarus. And he did. So here's the story of the golfer who lived.
So I'm here with my friend Vic Dupuy, and he's got a great hole-in-one story. Vic, do us a favor and just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. So anyways, I've been a resident here in the Kennett Square area since 1989. Grew up in State College, Pennsylvania, son of a couple of professors at the greatest school on earth.
Well, let's debate. Yeah, it's up there, but debatable.
we just married our youngest son to an Ohio State alum, so we're learning to have a bigger tent in our lives.
Excellent, excellent. And you're a member nearby, right, at Kennett Square Golf Club?
That's right. I've been a member there really since we moved into the area and had a big hand in helping develop the junior golf program there along with our head pro for many years, Tom Karpus.
Yeah.
And really have enjoyed being active both as a member and in just kind of encouraging junior golf as a general area of development for our club. A big group. We have about 160 to 180 kids each year that show up.
Phenomenal.
So that's a great part of what we do at Kennett Square Golf and Country Club.
Well, you've given a lot to golf, and golf gave you something pretty fantastic as well. When we were decided to do a pod about hole-in-ones, I immediately thought of your story. I heard it one day from one of your friends. I won't say who because he's actually in the story. But why don't you share with our listeners your hole-in-one story that actually kind of begins, I guess, before the hole-in-one itself.
Yeah, it actually starts 90 days earlier, Tom, because that's the day we had a big tournament at Kennett. It's a traditional members-only tournament, 3 6-hole formats. You pick your partner type deal, and it's a lot of fun. My partner that day is a friend and neighbor of mine who I've known for years, Tom Henry. And we got started. I was a little bit late getting to the first tee, but we got started on time. But I always felt like I was kind of out of breath the first couple of holes, even though we birdied 2 and kind of put us in a good position in the tournament. And so after 2, we went to the halfway house to get a refreshment, and I was sweating profusely. Couldn't quite explain it. I mean, it was a hot day, but it wasn't hot enough to explain how hot I was. And that's the last thing I remember. As Tom and my friends tell it, we went over to the third tee. We waited for a few minutes to tee off, as is typical on an early par three on the course. There was a lot of traffic that day. And finally got the chance to tee off, and they called me to come over from the cart, and my head was back, my eyes were dilated, and I had checked out. I had a cardiac arrest.
Wow.
And yeah, so Tom pulled me out of the cart, started beating on my chest and yelling at the same time for me to come back in a very loud Irish voice, which drew a crowd. The people around us thought maybe there was a fight going on. So,
oh my gosh.
We ended up with 30 to 40 guys hanging around, and Tom and a couple other members who knew CPR were taking turns doing compressions on my chest. And in the meantime, one of the members in our group who was a board member knew we had just installed a portable defibrillator at the halfway house we had just left right across the street. He went over to get the defibrillator, and that's where he ran into Doc Ashton, Bill Ashton, who's a anesthesiologist at the local hospital. And Bill has an interesting story of his own. He was supposed to be teeing off earlier that day, missed his tee time, jumped in front of another group, much to their chagrin, and teed off and hit his ball in the water. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been where he was. All those sort of coincidental events had to occur to have him find Jeff and say, what's going on? And
wow.
So he came back over with Jeff. They administered the paddles, hit me once, I didn't come back, hit me twice, I didn't come back. And then Doc pulled out of his bag this epinephrine that he has been carrying around for 10 or 15 years in his golf bag and stuck it under my tongue. They hit me a third time with the paddles and I came back. So,
oh my gosh.
You know, all things added together, I was gone, they say, about 8 minutes. You know, again.
Did you see anything?
No visions, no white lights, no guys in robes playing harps.
Heaven isn't a golf course. I was kind of.
No. The doctors theorized that my friends did such an amazing job of compressions that I never had any oxygen deprivation.
Wow.
And so, therefore, everything was just lights out, lights on kind of thing. So, yeah.
Amazing. And then, you know, that happens and you have to do some rehab, I imagine, or you're in the hospital. No golf for a while, I would say.
Right. So they ended up deciding I needed to have a defibrillator put in my chest. And because of that, I wasn't allowed to swing a golf club for 90 days.
Not easy.
And so club pro, Tom Karpis, I'm an avid golfer. Tom's, you know, feeling it for me. So he's like, hey, I'll help you get fitted to a new set of irons while you can't play. We'll get you all set up. So, you know, first day back, you can go right out with these new clubs. And so we did that. I got fitted for a new set of pings and was very excited to just be around the golf course when I couldn't play. And 90th day comes. I call my buddies who played with me the day of my event. And one said, sure, I'll play. One said, I can't. One said, I'll join you on the back. And off we went. And we had to start on the 10th hole that day because the first tee was packed. And as we finished the 10th hole at the green, we're adjacent to the 9th tee, and there was Bill Ashton, Doc Ashton. It's the first time I'd seen him since the event 90 days ago. It was a very, kind of an emotional reunion because, you know, here's the guy that saved my life, right?
Right.
So, you know, we kind of said our appropriate things to one another and went on our way. We went on and played the back. Bill was finishing the front, made the turn to play the back. As we finished the back, one of my friends, Jeff Hollander, who was there that day, joined us for the front nine. We got to the third hole, and I'm like, all right, guys, so, you know, tell me what happened. And Jeff's like, well, you were dead there, and we did this, and we did this, and we did this. So, all right, so let's play golf. So I pulled out my 6-iron on that hole, took the plastic off literally right there at the tee, and hit the sweetest 165-yard 6-iron you ever want to see. It landed about a foot and a half in front of the hole, took a little spin back, and dropped in. You know, and the funny part was, so
Doc, oh my gosh,
the doctor was back on the same tee he had been on the day of my event 90 days ago across the street and watched the hole in one. And so,
oh my gosh,
I'm laying on the ground of the tee laughing. I can't believe I've just hit a hole in one. My buddy's walking around with his hands on his head yelling, oh my God, oh my God. Doc looks over and goes, oh my God. You know, he's thinking I had another heart attack. And I jumped up and said, no, I'm okay.
He went looking for his EpiPen again. Oh, not again. Yeah. Oh, that is unbelievable. The hole that you, on which you were deceased to come back the first time again and you play it. and it's in the hole. That's just, I mean, there's a lot of providence in that story between where the doctor was, you know, gosh, a new, you take the plastic off the club and you knock it in on the first swing. That's pretty good, man.
Right, right. That's pretty crazy, isn't it?
That's pretty crazy. What's it like? It's your home club, and I know you're a golf addict, play a ton. So when you're back at that hole, what's it feel like?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate it every time I go by the hole. I look at the spot where they say I was laying on the ground, and I think about all the guys that, you know, kind of had to live through that experience. I was unconscious, so I didn't really live through it. I didn't see my friend laying on the ground, dark blue, no pulse. They had a lot to process, and you know, I think about the ripple effects of how many of those guys, you know, the stories of guys that quit smoking that day, that started exercising that day, that went to their companies and said, hey, we need to install AEDs. We need to have CPR training courses. And, you know, there's been a lot of, I would say, positive impact that way. And, you know, for me, I've always been a pretty optimistic guy. I've always described myself as a glass half full guy. And now I'm a glass full guy.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely got to shift your perspective on a lot of things. But Vic, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us. And, you know, as hole-in-one stories go, yours is going to be tough to top for sure.
It's a good story on this side of it. I'd trade it away, but it's a good story on this side.
Well, we're so glad you're doing well and so glad you're here to tell the tale. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Tom.